Todd, good afternoon. Thanks so much for joining us today. How's Todd Marchand?
Todd Marchant.
I'll tell you, man. Brad Marchand has.
If I didn't correct you, my dad, who's in Buffalo, would be mad. So
I have said your name on this show about 8 different times, and I keep pinning everything on Brad Marchand, Brad Marchand, like all of it. He has completely messed up anyone in the year 2020 trying to pronounce your name. Berkey nails
well,
it every
you know what?
Time.
My dad actually used to be pronounced Marchant or Marchant. Mm-hmm. And my dad said, I don't like that. We're going to pronounce it Marchand. So that's where it changed, was with my dad. So, but anyway, good to talk to you guys.
Todd Marchand joins us on Hockey Central. There we go. I was saying to the guys before he came on, when I think of your name and I think of you playing, the first thing that comes to my mind is speed. And the obvious question is, were you always a burner going back to the first time you put skates on?
Yeah, I think that was my biggest asset, even when I was a little kid. I was always a good runner. I mean, I was always small. I mean, I'm still small. Well, short, I should say. but I was always faster than everybody. And that was kind of like my meal ticket, so to speak. And I remember I grew up in Buffalo, and Scotty Bowman lived probably about, maybe a half a mile from where I did. And Stan Bowman, the GM of Chicago, we were the same age. We're both 1973 birth years. And we played a couple years together, minor hockey. And I remember Scotty coming up to my dad, and he said to me, he goes, who taught Todd how to skate? And my dad goes, a wooden chair. Like, just a wooden chair down the ice. And he said, to be honest with you, Pete, my dad, he goes, I've never seen a kid at this age, which I was probably about 10, have the recovery, you know, from after your stride, bringing it back underneath your body like Todd. And he goes, well, he never had an instructor. We never had coaches that were, you know, specialized instructors like they do today. So, yeah, to answer your question, I was always able to get by people with my speed. It's my hands that never seem to always catch up.
Berkey?
Hey, Bone, how are you?
You know what, Berkey? I'm doing great. We were Stanley Cup champions last night on the replay of Fox, so I'm feeling pretty good today.
Yeah, that's awesome. And anyone listening, Todd's nickname on the team was T-Bone, and everyone shortened it to Bone. So if you wonder why I can't remember his name, that's what I call him. So, Bone, tell us about the goal. I think a lot of people remember Anaheim, but tell us about the goal in Edmonton.
Well, you know, we were a young team. We were going up against a massive team in Dallas on paper. I mean, you look at their lineup with Nieuwendyk and Modano and Hatcher and Zuboff and Sador. It's like it goes on and on and on of guys that were tremendous hockey players. And we were just a bunch of kids. And, you know, I said it before, Ronnie Lowe, and you appreciate this, Berkey, Ronnie Lowe was our head coach, and he knew that we were underdogs. And he says, you know what, guys, we're young. We're going to skate, and we're going to out-hit them. We're going to look for 100 hits every game. And if this series continues to go on and on, we'll wear them down, and we have give ourselves a chance to win. So sure enough, don't we find ourselves in a Game 7 situation? We scored some kind of, like I say, lucky goals, but no goal is lucky, that timely goals in that series against Dallas. We found ourselves in a Game 7, and, you know, we got through the regular game and got into overtime, and I've been saying this a lot lately. I tell my kids and all the players that I coach, don't ever turn your back on the puck. Never turn your back on the puck. Well, I turned my back on the puck on that goal. I said to Dougie, I turned away from Dougie and just started skating. And he put it on my tape, and, you know, I end up beating Grant Leger. I think I closed my eyes and just put it by Danny Moog. And there's a, you know, they were joked around a lot about me not being able to put the puck in the ocean. That was a reporter on Edmonton that said that a lot, because they did have a lot of breakaways. They didn't score many, but I was able to score on that one. So it was a great moment for the team, because we were just, like I said, we were a bunch of kids, and I don't think it really hit us until we actually got to Colorado for the next round that we were actually in the second round of the playoffs.
Todd, when I heard you were coming on the show, I immediately was thinking about penalty killing. I remember you being an excellent penalty killer, and I asked our group chat, I said, he killed penalties, right? And Brian Burke responded, elite. He had you down as an elite penalty killer. So I wanted to get you to weigh in on killing penalties, and if it was something that you enjoyed doing, or if you just did it because it's something you were good at with your speed, if you took pride in it, how did you come to be such a good penalty killer?
Well, I think the first thing that stands out is my skating ability. I was able to that was my biggest strength. And when I got traded from the Rangers to Edmonton, Glenn Sather sat me down one day and said, son, he says, you need to be good at one thing and be good at it. And, you know, growing up, I was like a lot of other NHL players. I mean, I scored lots of goals and had lots of points. But you know what? I figured if I'm going to make it in this league, I got to have a niche. I got to find a way to keep my name in my in the lineup. And penalty kill was one of them. I started in Edmonton. I was killing with Kelly Buchberger, who was a great penalty killer for Edmonton for all those years. And then I started killing with Mike Greer, and we had a great chemistry as well. So it's just something that I it was part of something that I was going to do. I didn't have the hands per se to be a power play guy. So I really focused on being a good penalty killer. And you know what? I loved it. I absolutely loved it when you would go up against a really good power play, kind of like Dallas had in the playoffs in 97 with their crew. You look at the team that we beat last night on TV, Ottawa, you looked at their power play, how good their power play was in the playoffs. So it was a challenge, and I loved going up against that challenge, and it was something that I was really proud of.
That's that 2007 squad. We talk a lot about it for a lot of the obvious reasons. One of which is Brian works with us, and he's got intimate insight into that team, the composition of it, the play, all of it. And you mentioned that top line of Ottawa, and I think of that final. I mean, you did a remarkable job. The Sammy Paulson line was fantastic. And I can just recall a couple things from that 2007 Stanley Cup run. One, the amount of one-goal games you guys played in before winning the Cup. I think it was 12. And how you guys were able to snuff out, Spezza and Heatley and Alfredson. How'd you guys do it?
Well, you mentioned the Mullen line with the Paulson line with Sammy and Robbie and Travis Mullen, who their primary role was to shut down the other team's top line all year long. And they did a fantastic job. Not only did they shut the other team's line down, they scored the game winner in game one. They scored the game winner. So Travis Mullen scores the game winner in game one. Sammy Paulson scores the game winner in game two. Travis Mullen has two goals in game five. Robbie Niedermayer scores a goal in game five. So, I mean, here, mm-hmm. their job is to shut the other team down, and they're scoring goals. And then you look on the back end, and you just turn over, and you see Chris Pronger, you see Scott Niedermayer, Francois Beauchemin, Sean O'Donnell, everybody. We did it by committee. Joe DePenta, Rick Jackman, Ken Huskins. I mean, everybody, that when those guys were on the ice, they knew that their job was to not let them score. And they did it by committee, and everyone pitched in. Everyone knew. That's the one thing about that team that was unbelievable, is that everybody had a role. And you know what? You very rarely did you step outside of that role. And that's why that team was so successful, because guys bought in to what the coaching staff and management was preaching. And that was, we're here about winning a Stanley Cup. And, mm-hmm. It was pretty magical.
Berkey?
You played nine. You were drafted by the Rangers originally, then traded for Craig McTavish, actually, for McT, and ended up playing for him later. But nine seasons in Edmonton. I remember you telling me in Anaheim, Bowen, that you really enjoyed playing in Edmonton.
This may be a trivia question for you guys, but I think I'm one of the only guys to get traded for another player one-on-one and then have him as his head coach.
McTavish?
He told me that one time, but I'm not sure. But you know what? We did. We loved it in Edmonton. But again, we were young. I was 19, 20 years old when I got traded there. My wife graduated from college. She moved out there with me. My older three kids are all born there. It was home for us. I mean, I grew up in Buffalo. She grew up in Vermont. So it wasn't like we were, grew up in some other place and went to Edmonton and had to experience those winters, which are tough. Because we experienced it our whole life anyway. But it was a team, it was an organization that was built on young players, and it was going to be a young team. And I got great memories of playing at Edmonton. There's no question.
Todd, I'm fascinated by something you mentioned a couple times on air here already about how you didn't have the greatest hands, you said, so you had to do other things. You had to do things with your feet. I want to know about the idea of being so good with your feet, but your hands, as you said, not being able to keep up. What does that feel like? Do you work on that during your career? I mean, you had a 17-year incredible career, and so obviously it didn't hurt you too much, but what do you mean when you say that your hands couldn't keep up? Was that a constant challenge in your career?
No, it was. And
yes.
You know,
yes.
By no means am I going to compare myself to this player because we're not even the same atmosphere. But you watch Connor McDavid, and what's the first thing that stands out? His speed, right? Everyone thinks, right, oh, yeah, my God, this guy can fly. But he can do things with the puck at that speed. Pavel Bure could do things with the puck at that speed. And that's what I struggled with. I could get by a guy by skating a million miles an hour, but then by that point I had a trouble slowing it down in for my hands and in my brain. And for whatever reason, I wasn't able to produce offensively at the rate I probably could have for the chances that I get. Don't get me wrong. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't change it for the world. I mean, yeah, I would have loved to score more goals and get more assists and whatever, but you know what? I mean, I enjoyed the role that I played. And you look at championship teams. And again, I watched games 1, 2, 4, and 5 on Fox the last 4 days. And I couldn't believe, and I sort of forgot this, but I couldn't believe how many different lines I played on. Berge, you'll accept this. I mean, it was like I played left wing on this line. I played center on this line. I was on the penalty kill. I even saw myself on the power play. That's because Cooney was hurt. And I never played power play for Randy at all. So it was like I just moved all over the line. It was almost like I had to ask Randy, like, what position am I playing on this shift? Because I didn't know. So I embraced that because, you know what, like, if you want to win, sometimes you got to make sacrifices. And everybody on that team made those sacrifices.
Todd, now I'm curious as well. Now, as you work as director of player development for the Anaheim Ducks, do you ever find yourself trying to teach players to slow their game down?
I do, and it's not easy. I think that with today, I think there are times where video comes into play. We didn't have access to the video the way players do today. I mean, I say this with the utmost respect for Randy, but, you know, his door to the coach's office was not always open. You know, oh, the coach's door is always open. No, it's not. I mean, nowadays, players can see a clip on the bench. Players can see a clip in between periods. They have access to way more things than we ever did before. I mean, for example, if you were on the road playing in Phoenix and you wanted to see what the scores were the next day, you had to look at the newspaper. I mean, that's how we got our information, you know, until cell phones and all that started coming in towards the end of my career. So the access that players have today is so much greater, and you're able to do things for them so that they can see things visually. And I think that might have helped me. But then again, I mean, who knows? I can't say for that. But, you know, I wish I could have done more, and I try to do more for the kids that I work with.
You know, there's so many great young kids in this Ducks organization. The one thing Anaheim does, you know, maybe better than any other team, is draft and then develop. It is remarkable how many great young prospects, whether it's Lundestrom or Troy Terry, or a lot of players already there. You know, we think of Max Comtois, and we think of Sam Steele, etc. Who should we, as casual fans, get excited about in Anaheim as far as the young players on the horizon?
Well, you know, it's tough to pick out one player that you can say, hey, this guy's going to be, because they all go through different phases. I mean, it's you know, they've all been, the players that we've drafted, they've all been very successful, whatever level that they played at. That doesn't always translate to the NHL or the American Hockey League right away. And the players that you mentioned, all of them have had their struggles along the way. So they have to find their way and how they're going to be successful in the NHL. And the thing is that we've been, and I'm not the only person across the league, everybody's telling the same thing. Guys, you got to get bigger, stronger, faster. This is a tough league. you know, it's hard to be successful. And, you know, and then all of a sudden they get into a game or two or halfway through a season, they go, whoa, now I know what you're talking about. So I think that everybody, no two players develop at the same rate. And I know we're really excited about all of them. We're a team that's, building on youth and developing, and with a mix of our older players, and we're expecting to get back to the standard that we created, 2012 through 2019.
Bricky, last question to you.
Well, you mentioned the coach's office door wasn't always open, but I think we had the right coach for that group. Talk about Randy and playing for Randy Carlisle.
You know what? I have the utmost respect for every coach that I played for, but I have the utmost respect for Randy. Every once in a while I shoot him a text and he gets back to me. And he was a hard matching coach, and for offensive players that's very difficult, because when it's their turn to go and the other team puts out their top line, and you've got the Sammy Paulson line, who I alluded to before, who's averaging, 17, 18, 19 minutes a night, when that's usually reserved for your top six, two top lines who are maybe getting a little bit less or the same, that's very difficult for them. But for a player like myself or Sammy or Robbie or Mo, we loved it. I mean, we got to play more minutes than we ever thought we were going to play. And he was really good at making adjustments in game. And he was no more evident than, how he was able to move guys around the lineup, put them in different situations to get the team motivated or keep things going in the right direction, whatever it is, or keep a guy going that was playing well. He was really, really good at that. But he had his crusty side. He was very, very rarely did you get a chuckle out of him. And if you did, it was like a big deal. And, I'll share a story if I have time.
Go for it.
I had just gotten to Anaheim, and Berkey, you back me up on this. And I couldn't hear Randy. He was barking on the ice or trying to say. I couldn't hear. Does anybody understand what he's saying? And everybody's like, no, I don't understand. So anyway, I went back to the hotel that night, and I was watching a movie called Dodgeball. And oh my God, I'm like, he sounds like Patches O'Houlihan. The guy that was teaching the guys how to play Dodgeball. And so I'm like, oh my God, it was getting close to Christmas. I was going back to Columbus because that's where my family was. And I'm like, you know what? I'm going to give Randy a gift. So I went to the mall and I picked up a white scarf and I put a wrench in the box and I had it after game. We played, I think it was Chicago. It was our last game before the break in 05-06. And he was done with his speech. I said, Randy, I said, everybody's leaving. I said, but together, the guy's got a gift for you. And nobody else really knew about it. And I handed it to him, and he was like, oh, okay, thanks. I said, no, you got to open it up. And so he opens it up, and he looked at it, and he's like, the white scarf and a wrench. Well, then all the boys knew what we were talking about. But he hadn't seen the movie. He didn't know what we were talking about. So we come back from break, and we were on a road trip, and we're on the plane. And so anyway, they put the movie on for him, and he came back, and he started laughing. He's like, that is so funny, T-Bone. So we started calling him Patches. So the players know him as Patches, and so we had a lot – He was good at that. He was good about stuff like that. That was for sure.